Part two of our series, How God Uses Money to Shape Us, deals with responsibility. God takes primary responsibility to provide resources, but we have a secondary and important responsibility as well. How do we remain diligent regarding debts, budgeting, and saving? Well, here's Pastor Seth.
We are doing a series, How God Uses Money to Shape Us, how He shapes our lives. God is the primary resource, and He has the ability to reach in into our lives and open that spigot, however much He wants to. He also has the ability to reach in into our lives and turn that spigot down, or to a trickle, or off, when He wants to shape us. This has happened to me numerous times in the course of my adult life. God uses money, usually the lack of money, to get our attention and to do something in the area of character. When I was thinking about this, I was thinking about a fellow named Dan. Dan's 45 years old, never been married. And his mother had died a few years before. His father had terminal cancer. Father had maybe 6 months to live. And Dan was moving back into his home to help his father the last few months of his life. And the dad said, you know, we need to sit down and to show you my will, what's going to happen after I die. They sat down, and Dan realized that when his dad died, he was going to inherit a fortune. And it was just one of those seminal moments in life where you suddenly get that slap across your face and you think, what am I doing with my life? And these thoughts went through his mind. You know, I've never been married, and I don't have kids, and I should get married. And I should have kids. And I'm going to have all this money, and I don't have no idea about investments. Maybe I should take an investment class. I'm going to be running my father's business, I guess. And so he signed up for an investment class. He's sitting on the fourth row of the investment class. He's listening, and he notices on the third row and two seats to his right is the most gorgeous human being he's ever seen in his life. And he is dumbstruck. That's a good word for this, isn't it? You know, we guys, we're just pathetic at this. You see somebody that looks like the goddess Athena, and you just think, that's the woman for me. You know nothing about this woman, but she's the woman for me. Well, he was dumbstruck, and he thought, and he noticed there was no ring on her finger. He tried to focus on the investment. He kept looking at her, and he was trying to get his nerve up to go introduce himself to her, because it's hard, because she was clearly out of his league. Investment seminar ended. People were leaving. She was getting her purse. It's now or never. He gets up, he walks around the aisle, comes down, and says, excuse me, almost apologetically introduces himself, and then he's stuck, doesn't really know what to say, and he says, I may seem like just kind of an average guy, but my father's going to die within the next few months, and when he does, I'm going to inherit about $200 million. And then he froze again. He had no idea what to say. But she kind of picked up the ball of the conversation and warmly smiled, and they talked, and he finally said, well, do you have a business card? And she said, yes. She pulled out a business card. I mean, he pulled out a business card, and she gave him her business card. And wouldn't you know it, 3 days later, he had a new stepmom. Who says women aren't good at financial planning? Come on. That's pretty good, man. There's a woman of opportunity. In your handout, God takes primary responsibility to provide our resources. We talked about this last week. When we take on the primary responsibility for our resource, we have just set ourselves up for a lot of stress. Personal stress, marital stress, financial stress. God doesn't want you to have that stress. He wants to take primary responsibility for resources. But you and I have a secondary responsibility for resources that is not trivial. It's also important. And we're going to talk about that today. What I'd like to do is do five responsibilities that the scriptures talk about where God uses money to shape us. And the main idea here today is responsibility. How are we to be responsible? Number one responsibility is to honor God. Our number one thing that he's trying to do in our lives is to honor God. You'll have to imagine more than just this silly little crown. But God is working all through the Old Testament, if you're a student of that, to get us to a place where we honor him above everything else. Now, it's a little bit odd because you talk to most Christians, and if they've been around the church world some, and you ask them, do you love God? They'll say, oh, yeah, I love God. The problem is not, do I love God or not? The problem is, what do I love more than God? That's the problem. Anything less than honoring God as first in our life, the Bible calls idolatry. It is truly a bad idea and sets us up for, as we talked about last week, all kinds of stress and heartache. And you can be sure that this is important to God. He has the ability to reach down into our lives and take that spigot and close that thing down tight until we get to a place where we start asking some important questions. What is the most important thing in my life? Who is the most important person in my life? Am I honoring him above the other things and people in my life? In Deuteronomy 17, the scripture says, do not sacrifice to the Lord your God an ox or a sheep that has any defect or flaw in it, for that would be detestable to him. Now, when the Old Testament people worshiped, they didn't come and pull out their checkbooks and write a check. They came and they offered something out of their flocks or herds. Now, the thing that was so easy for human nature to do is what Moses talks about here. Do not sacrifice to the Lord your God an ox or a sheep that has any defect or flaw in it. Now, what that meant back then is if a sheep had a broken leg, it would only bring so much on the market if they sold the sheep. If it had a speckled coat or a striped coat, if it was short, it would only bring so much on the open market. A sheep that had no speckles, no stripes, that was in complete health, the larger the sheep, the greater the cash that a shepherd could get for that sheep. And so guess what the temptation to do was if you brought a sheep or an ox is to go find the one that's going to bring the least amount on the market and bring that to worship. Now, Why is that important? Why is that important not to do that? Now, he says that would be detestable to God. Why? Now, I know how people think because sometimes I've thought this way. Well, does God really care what kind of sheep I bring? Isn't this really a matter of the heart? Does God really care what kind of ox I bring? Isn't this just a matter of the heart? It's really not going to do any good to anybody else. That's how we think. But God says there's something else going on inside of us that is really, really fundamental. And that is what we bring to God calibrates our heart as to what's important. The order of things that are important. What we value above and value next. The idea is that if I bring sort of a lame offering to God, it has an effect invisibly on my heart as to how much I really, really, really value God and how much I really value other things. You may not even be aware of it. But it's so important, he says, it's detestable. Please do not do that. The order of importance, putting God first in your life, is of prime importance. Proverbs says the same thing. Honor the Lord with your wealth and with the first fruits of all your produce. The first fruits of all your produce. Then your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will be bursting with wine. Here the idea is we honor God by what? We give him what's first out of, if you're a farmer, what's first out of the harvest, or for us today, what's first out of our paycheck. And there's something attached to that first gift, and that is the quality of honor. I am honoring God by doing this. Or as Deuteronomy says in another place, when we give, it's our reminder to our heart to put God first. It calibrates our hearts as to what's most important. Now, he makes a promise here. Honor the Lord with your substance, with the first fruits of all your crops. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing. Your vats will be bursting over with new wine. Now, I have said, and I've heard many people say, I just can't give out of the first fruits because we just don't have that much. The inference being, if we had that much, then we'd give out of the first fruits. And I can tell you, it seems to me like God really doesn't work that way. It seems to me like he is really important about the order of these two verses. That it's the first fruits that we give, and then he gives back to us as kids. How about you? When you get paid, what goes through your mind? Oh, now we can get our way out of debt. What's a good thing to do? Oh, we just got paid. Now we can get those bills paid. Get caught up on some bills. That's a good thing to do. Oh, and go have some fun. Well, that's a good thing to do too, if you have the means. Does the idea of I'm honoring God become the first thing you think of? That's what he's trying to get us to a place where in our heart of hearts, as we look at life, that's how we see life. That I'm trying to honor God with my life in general, and one way that I reinforce that is by honoring him with finances. That's responsibility number one. Responsibility number two, pay your bills ASAP. Pay your bills ASAP. There are some times, I remember when we were newlyweds, that we would get behind on our bills. And I remember thinking, what happened? How do we get so far behind on our bills? One reason why this happens, and I was guilty of this, was I violated this particular principle of pay your bills as soon as paid. As soon as you get paid. 1 Timothy 5:8 says, if anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, that word provide, does not provide, is the equivalent of paying bills. This is what he's talking about. We need to have money for groceries and to keep the electric on and keep the gas on, keep the water going. All the different bills that you have to pay go into this verse. Now, what he's saying here is, this is high priority stuff. Which is another way of saying, your bills have a higher value to you than you may think. It's very easy just to kind of get in that bill paying mode, time to pay bills, get my checkbook out, write them, off they go. Now, that's a good thing to do. But the importance of those things is easy to get lost. Let's look at, I remember when we were early married, there was a verse that our next verse really was really a verse that struck me. We were living on a shoestring. And this was not a good idea as a newlywed couple. And I thought, something's not right. I didn't learn this from my dad. I should have learned it from my dad. And so we had a guy in our church in Texas who's a CPA, and I said, hey, can I have breakfast with you? He said, sure. I said, how do you do this family budget thing? He said, we're just not doing good at this at all. And so he started asking me some questions and trying to get a feel for, you know, what we had going and what we didn't have going. We had more of the latter than the former. And he said, and one of the questions he asked me was, how do you decide what you're going to spend money on? And so I was trying to think, how do we really do that? And I had in my mind several months of Mindy saying, hey, Seth, can we afford to blah, blah, blah? So I told my friend Randy that. He said, how do you respond? I said, well, I respond by if we're about a week after payday, I think, oh, we can't do it right now, honey. We've only got a certain amount of dollars to last a certain amount of days. And she'd say, okay. But the other response I would have was, sure, we just got paid, was my response. And he tried to keep from laughing, but he was not that successful. And he showed me this verse, which was a game changer for me in this particular thing of bills. Do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it is in your power to act. Now, I'd always just sort of considered this verse in terms of giving to a need. But the principle is larger than just that one application. Do not withhold good from those who deserve it, meaning the electric company has and the water company has already given services to us. When it is in your power to act, that's payday. Do not say to your neighbor, come back later, I'll give it tomorrow, when you now have it with you. I remember looking at that verse and going, that explains a lot of this. Because what I realized was, on those times when Mindy said, can we afford it? And I said, sure, we just got paid. Out goes money. And then we're left with a less amount of money to pay the same bills we normally did. And so he said, you know, Seth, when do you get paid? I said, 15th and 30th. He said, as close to the payday as possible, you should sit down and pay all your bills for the next 2 weeks before the next period first. You give to God, pay your bills. Then that gives you the real amount of discretionary money you have, not this inflated amount of what seems like discretionary money that's really bills and discretionary money. Hebrews says, keep your lives free from the love of money. Be content with what you have because God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. That's a verse that underscores this principle. Live within your means. To live within your means, the easiest way to do that is to pay your bills as soon as you get paid. So those are the first two responsibilities. Honor God, pay your bills ASAP. Third responsibility, write a budget. Write a budget. I run across some Christians every once in a while and said, we don't do a budget. We're just trusting God with our finances. As if this is an either-or situation. Either I'm going to trust God and do that awful thing of budgeting. It's not an either-or thing. This is a both-and. The scriptures say we are to trust God and we're to use our noggin to make a budget. Here's how Proverbs says this, 27:3. Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds. Now, when you're reading a verse in the Bible, whenever the writer is repeating something or adding some adjectives to it, that means take note. Something important is being said here. Be sure you don't miss it. So he says he could say, know the condition of your flocks. That'd be good enough right there. But he starts out with be sure. Don't miss this. You know the condition of your flocks. And then in case we missed it the first time, give careful attention to your herds. Now he says to know the condition of your flocks. What is it that we're to know? Well, I think we're to know what we own and what we owe. We're to know what comes in and what generally goes out. Those four things. That's a good thing to know. What I own and what I owe, what comes in, what goes out. Now why, he says, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations. Now, riches don't endure forever. Probably most of us in this room have already learned this. They just seem to fly away at different times. But the writer adds one little more caveat to this verse. His illustration of this is a crown, meaning a king, is not secure for all generations. Even the person that looks like they've got it made, they're set for life. Maybe yes, maybe no. The uncertainty of wealth. Now, what does this have to do with a budget? In putting together budgets and hearing people talk about spending, you often hear a statement like this. Man, we just got hit with an unexpected bill. Unexpected bill. What was it? Transmission went out on our car. Oh, huh. Unexpected. Refrigerator just went out. Got to get a new compressor. Unexpected expense. Are these things really unexpected? Nope. Not in this world. In heaven? Yep. Not here. Now, one of the tricks in budgeting is you should anticipate that you're going to have to fix your car and do maintenance on it. And you're going to have to patch a roof every once in a while. You're going to have to put a new compressor in a refrigerator. You're going to have to get somebody to haul off the old dryer that's in the garage and get a new one or a rebuilt one in there. Now, you say, well, where do you put that in the budget? Well, it depends on how detailed you are. You can put in auto service. You can put home repair as a budget item. You say, man, we're just not that detailed. Fine. Then just start out with one item that says unexpected. And put quotation marks around there. And start setting some money aside for your unexpected, even though over time you're going to realize a lot of my unexpected resource or bills really should have been expected. Now, why does he say to know the condition of your flocks? Verse 25. When the hay is removed and new growth appears, the grass from the hills is gathered in, the lambs will provide you with clothing, and the goats with the price of a field. Now, what he's looking for here, what he illustrates, is two things. It's going to provide for present needs, clothing, and future expansion, another field. It's important to do budgeting. There's a value. The fourth thing is diligence. Diligence. Fourth area that God is working on, fourth responsibility is diligence. There have been many times in my life where God has put his finger on some of the following six things that are enemies of diligence. And it's interesting to me that almost every one of them has a cause and effect between income and that spigot getting closed. Either God reaching down and turning off the spigot, or without us even knowing it, ourselves reaching for the spigot and turning it off as an effect of a bad cause. Let's look at these six things. The first one is good intentions. Good intentions. Proverbs 14:23. All hard work brings a profit, but mere talk tends only to poverty. Now, I remember being, when I was a seminary student, one summer, I worked at Ward's Warehouse. I think I was maybe 23 years old. In Fort Worth, Texas, in the summer, in a warehouse, un-air-conditioned. And I didn't have a car. I had a bicycle. And I had to bike probably about 10 miles each way to get to work. It was downhill going to work, uphill on the way home. A one-speed bike. Because I think, well, they did have three speeds back then. I had a one-speed bike. Now, I got to work, and I was ready to, I was loading trucks, unloading trucks, doing the forklift, stacking stuff that was coming in. But I worked with two guys, and each of them had the same thing. I get there, and we get our responsibility to take off, and these guys would say, "Hey, Seth, don't work too hard today. Don't work too hard today." And I'm still a pretty young Christian, three years into this, and I'm thinking, "Don't work too hard today." That comes pretty easy for me. I can do that without even having to think about it. My challenge is to put in a full day, to work hard at what I'm doing for Montgomery Ward's and the warehouse there in Fort Worth. Now, since then, as I've gotten older, you talk to a lot of guys, gals, and, talk about, man, I had a hard week, a lot of work. I was working hard this week. And it appears to me, just casual observation, that it's much easier to talk about a hard work week, putting in the hours, being diligent, than it is to actually do a hard work and put in the hours. Just saying. And it's easy for us to sort of assume that because I talk a good talk of diligence, that I must be in the diligence. And yet, what he says is, but mere talk leads only to poverty. And there have been times where God, I think, has reached down into my world and just sort of brought the spigot down to a trickle. For things like, if I'm supposed to be at work at 8:30, what time do I show up? 8:35? 8:40? But nobody's going to know. What, if I'm supposed to work till 5, what time do I leave? Well, I leave at 4:50, but nobody cares. Really? You get an hour for lunch. How much time do you take for lunch? You get two 15-minute coffee breaks. How much do you take time for your coffee breaks? Now, what God is trying to do here in priority number 4 is to make us a diligent people. Now, the easy way to do this is to read a verse like this and go, oh, I get it. The hard way is to show up at work late, leave early, expand your lunchtime and your coffee breaks, and God just has to kind of go, because he's trying to make us diligent. Are you a boss watcher? When the boss is around, man, I'm all over it. I'm going 50 miles an hour. As soon as that boss takes off, number 2, haste. Haste. The plans of the diligent lead surely to profit, as surely as haste leads to poverty. There is a difference between being busy and being diligent. I remember doing a study in this years ago in Proverbs, and I found out that just because a guy like me checks off a lot of boxes in his day does not mean he was diligent. He was busy, but was he diligent? Diligence usually has to do with doing more important things that are harder to do and take more time. This is eating the elephant. And I finally realized after doing my study of the diligent man, the sluggard, and the slothful man in Proverbs, that there were days where I may only get 3 boxes checked off, and one of those boxes is I took the next step on this elephant, and I was more diligent here than 15 boxes over here. Now, again, this is important. We all like to do what's easy. We all like to do what's fun. We all like to do what we're good at. I fight this battle as a 62-year-old man today. Same battle. Every day when I come to work, I fight this battle. Some days I do better than others. Plans of the diligent lead surely to profit. The diligent. He's doing the most important things. He's swinging an axe at that oak tree. Third one, laziness. The sluggard's craving will be the death of him because his hands refuse to work. Now, notice what he says here. The sluggard's craving. I just wish we had more money. Just wish we could pay our bills. And it's easy for that craving to convince our own hearts that we're diligent. That's not the case. The sluggard's craving will be the death of him because his hands refuse to work. Here, what's needed is action, not craving, action. Proverbs 6:6, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, no boss, no manager. Yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. It's amazing about all those little ants. Every one of them is a self-starter. Every one of those ants is a self-starter. The queen ant is not in there with her time clock going, all right, hey, you're late again. I have to do something about you, Fred. Hey, wake up. They're just at it. Self-starter. Laziness. Fourth one. Procrastination. The lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent man prizes his possessions. Now, this is an interesting picture. Because here the idea is the lazy man, procrastination, the lazy man, think 300 years ago, or in some parts of the world today. If the family's going to eat, I got to go out and shoot something. Okay, now this guy went out and he shot something. You like this. Shot something. Plenty of food there. He drags that carcass home. But then he sits down, falls asleep in his easy boy chair, lazy boy chair, while the food is not roasted. Does not roast his game. He started something. That was good. But he didn't finish what he started. Family's sitting there. What are we going to have for dinner tonight? Oh, we got any leftovers from last night? Didn't finish his possession. Didn't finish what he had started. Procrastination. Next one, excuses. The sluggard says, there's a lion outside. I'll be murdered in the streets. Now, one of the things we are good at it as human beings is we are great at excuses. Nobody ever has to take a class on making excuses. Man, we are pros. Every one of us a pro. I've got my reasons why I didn't get something done. I got my reasons why I couldn't start something. I got a reason why I couldn't make that phone call. I got a reason why I was going to do this week, but I'll get to it Tuesday. Man, if we had the same physical ability to do the mental gymnastics that we do with excuses, we would be Olympic gymnasts. Now, you can be sure that in this realm where we're making excuses, no problem for God to reach down and say, enough of that. He's trying to build diligence into us. And then little compromises. Love this little story from Proverbs 24. Solomon says, I passed by the field of a sluggard, by the vineyard of a man without sense. Now, this is really interesting to me. He's walking along the road through the countryside, apparently, and he sees a field. He looks at the field, and he makes two observations. Whoever owns this field is a sluggard, and he's a man without sense. Now, how did he know that? Was there a road sign that said, field of a sluggard? A man without sense. No. He looked at that thing and he drew a couple of conclusions. This is why he drew the conclusions about being a sluggard and a man of sense. Lo, it was all overgrown with thorns. The ground was covered with nettles or weeds. The stone wall was broken down. Pretty easy to see. Field's a mess. What's the guy doing in this field? Now, I will tell you, if you've been to our house, these two verses haunt me. Of all the things that I do at our house, the thing I like the very least is working in our backyard. Front yard, no problem. I'll be doing some of that this afternoon. Backyard, that's a whole different subject. And all I have to do is look at my backyard to get a pretty good assessment of where I am. There's more work for God to do in your pastor in this particular area. Now, he says, I saw the field, the weeds, the nettles, the stone wall. I considered it. He ponders this. What's going on here? I looked and received instruction. And then he thought, there's something to be learned here. This is what he learned. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands in front of the television. I need a break. I need a rest. And poverty will come upon you like a bandit, and scarcity like an armed man. Does my backyard have something to do with our finances? I believe it does. You can believe otherwise, you're free to do that. I can just tell you in my life that little compromises come at a price. Last responsibility is savings. Savings. Again, I hear well-meaning Christians say, oh, we don't need to save anything. We're just trusting God as if this is an either-or thing. It's a both-and. A prudent man sees danger and takes refuge. The simple keep going and suffer for it. Four things on earth are small, yet they are extremely wise. Ants are creatures of little strength. They store up food in the summer. God commends the ant for foresight and thinking about the future. That's a wise thing. Solomon calls it a prudent man. Now, when we were living on a shoestring and my friend was helping him with our budget, he asked me, are you saving anything? I tried not to laugh. I was not successful. How can we save anything? And he said, well, how much would you like to save? And I said, well, I think we should be saving maybe $100 a month. And we've been married a couple of years. He said, well, how are you doing on that so far? Well, how much have you saved? So far, we've saved nothing. He said, wait, Seth, you got to, he said, there's a verse I want you to read, and then we're going to see if we can apply it. Dishonest money dwindles away, but he who gathers money little by little makes it grow. The little by little principle. He said, okay, I know you can't save $100 a month. Yeah. Can you save $50 a month? I said, but that would be too small. I know we should be saving more. He said, I didn't ask you what you should be. I asked you, could you save, doubtful. Could you save $25 a month? My pride was just going down in flames. I don't think so. Can you do $10 a month? Yes. As soon as we get paid, one of those paychecks, $10. So this was January of, we'd been married maybe 2 years. And I remember getting paid on January 15th. You had to take your check to the bank back then. I put it in the bank, and then I transferred $10 out of checking into savings. Now, it sounds like a really stupid, small thing, isn't it? Just kind of, you know, what's that? However, yours truly was standing there looking at this and thinking, we accomplished one of our goals this year. We saved $10 a month for the first month. I went home and told Mindy, guess what we did today? She said, what? I said, we have money in our savings account. She said, we do? $10. Now, on the 30th, we got paid again. Brandon, you're home. The 30th, we got paid. Now, we didn't have to save anything till February 15th. But I'm standing there putting my check in. I'm thinking, I got an opportunity to double our goal. Right here. Should I go for it? Yeah. Another $10 into savings. Now we had $20 in our savings account. The first month, we had not only met our goal, we doubled our goal. Now I'm being a little facetious with you, but I'm also being pretty true. My motivation to save changed by the little by little principle. Instead of savings being a mark of failure, it actually became a mark of, man, I'm doing something right. Let's pray together. Father, you are working to make us people who reflect the Lord Jesus Christ. And part of what that means is being responsible with what you've entrusted to us. And of these five things we've looked at, would you take each one of us where we are and move us ahead? Help us to see these things the way you see them and to value them the way that you value them. We want to honor you as the most important person in our life. We want to be responsible with our bills and with the privileges that we have of providing for the people in our lives. We want to plan accordingly with our budget, to know the condition of our flocks. Help us to be diligent in our work, and help us to be wise in our savings.